I'm amazed with how often I feel regret or guilt for something I have said or done, or not said or done. Then I discovered that's just how the brain works. Understanding the relationship between the brain, stress, and behavior allowed me to access my brilliance in moments of conflict, quit taking everything so personally, and stop berating myself and others. It can be the same for you. The brain information is so transformationally powerful and so vitally important to everything else you will learn that I have divided it into two sections. The first section helps us understand the three mind-body-brain states and how these states relate to behavior and discipline. The second section helps us to apply these concepts to wiring the brain for optimal development. Join me now for the first session for Becoming Brain Smart. Welcome to the session on Becoming Brain Smart. One of the foundations of conscious discipline is brain research and understanding our brain. So here's how we're going to start this time. So Jenny, if you'd come play with me. She's kind of dressed up in her brain, but she's good to go. So stand over here. And so it's going to go, who let the manners out? We're going to go, I did. Who let the kindness out? I did. Now this is the moment for you to get your joy juice. So you're going to turn back to back, going to go, who let the caring out? It must have been you. Do you see that moment? Okay, you ready? Let's try it again. It must have been you. And then the rest is just, we're going to follow the song. But that's our joy juice. That's our joy juice moment. So make sure you grab yours because that jug is valuable. All right, so everybody, up, up. Yeah, we're going to clap for that stuff now. Yes. Okay. Take a moment and just reflect. Just reflect on when you actually let that kindness out. When do you let the kindness out? When are you more likely to do it? So let me tell you a story. So I'm up. I think I was in New York City, actually, but I'm not sure exactly at this point. But I had on one of these beautiful little greeting aprons like this. And I was going around before the workshop, connecting with people, because that is important. And I would be going up and I'd go, people would be walking into the workshop. I said, would you like a skunk greeting, an octopus, an alligator? And I'd be doing those. So I go up to this one lady. I said, would you like a skunk, an alligator, or an octopus greeting? She goes, I'd like you to move so I can get some coffee. And, you know, at that moment, at that moment, she taught me a profound lesson, one that I had known, but made it so real and so simple. The simple truth that state dictates behavior. She hadn't had her coffee yet. Must have been a hard morning. It was like, just move out of my way, lady. And if you reflect upon that, you can see that it is your state. When you're feeling loved and valuable and appreciated, you're more likely to let people merge on the freeway. If you're feeling grumpy, overwhelmed, underappreciated, then it's like, oh no, I will fight you to death. I will be in front. I will be in front of you. So the same hold true for children. But it's interesting that we believe, now actually let me ask you, do you believe that? How many believe that? You believe state dictates behavior? How about you guys watching it on DVD? Do you believe this? Do you believe state dictates behavior? Raise your hand if you believe it. All right. Now, if state dictates behavior, we spend all our time focusing on behavior when it comes to discipline. And you just said that it was that state, the insides of me, that's going to dictate it, yet we only focus on what we see. So if you look at the screen, you'll see an iceberg. And basically, we tend to focus at the top on the behavior, and that really is about adult symptom relief. And again, let's look at our society at large. How often do we go for symptom relief? I mean, right now I've got some ibuprofen going on in my body, just a little symptom relief. So, you know, if we stay up late, what do we have? Coffee. Okay, symptom relief. It doesn't mean I need to go to bed early, it just means I have to drink more coffee the next day. We go to the doctor who doesn't quite know what's wrong with us, but gives us all kinds of pills to relieve the symptom. And the interesting thing, if you ever look at the bottle, the symptoms you're trying to relieve are the side effects of the pill you just took, which always baffles me. But anyway, so again, if we see it out there, it's happening in us. We are part of the solution. Okay? But underneath that iceberg is all the inner states, how we're feeling, whether we feel appreciated and valued or grumpy and underappreciated. All that is the stuff inside of us. And these are old, old conditioned unconscious reactions that are inside of us that get kind of triggered and boom, show up as behavior. So conscious discipline says, let's work on self-regulation. Let's go with this stuff on the inside so that we can change the outside. Because if that's what the problem is, if that's where the problem is, let's go to the source of the problem. We're working very hard because we're doing it backwards. You know, I live in Florida. So in Florida, you throw, you can throw a toothpick out the window and grow an oak tree. Maybe it's a pine tree. I'm not sure, but you're going to grow some kind of tree. I mean, our weeds grow rampantly here. And I'm sure wherever you live, you probably have some weed issue. But it's interesting that when we go to pull them, you know, if you pull them just at the top, oh, Lord, your whole yard will be covered in a day. I mean, if you pull them from the source, at least you can buy a week. It's better if we go to the source and actually deal with what's going on and make some permanent behavior change. So we're working hard because we're doing it backwards. We need to focus on the state first and the behavior second. And what this does is self-regulation, focusing on all this and how to manage it, our emotions and our internal beliefs and our thoughts, our inner speech, focusing on all this puts a pause between the stimulus and the response. So we want to, there's a stimulus, some kid hits another kid, pause, wise response, as opposed to some kid hits another kid and we're going, what on earth were you doing? And our pre-programmed knee-jerk reactions. Now, when we talk about self-regulation, 2 decades of research say that self-regulation is more important than early reading, math skills, IQ, and everything. Yet we persist, and that's why I love having parents and teachers in the same room, yet we persist on trying to shove academics down into young children when that's the time they need to be learning self-regulation, not reading and writing and counting. And if you look at the planet again at large, most countries have people who can read, write, and count. But yet we have no countries that doesn't still, quote, hit its neighbors. So we've got a challenge to reverse the trend that's happening. And also, now this one's hard to swallow, so everyone, let's just take a deep breath. One more. Just relax. Here's what research tells us. The way parents treat each other is more powerful for a child's development of self-regulation than the way a parent treats the child themselves. So again, like I told you in session one, children are watching the interactions between us. And this one's hard. This one's hard because it says the quality of that relationship at the top is going to impact the self-regulation skills of the kids growing in it. So again, it comes back to us. Let's make some changes. Let's do this. We can do this. It's not hopeless. We haven't screwed up anybody. We don't need to feel guilty. We just need to make a change, and we can do it. Now, here's the thing you need to understand. To self-regulate, it takes two. So everybody hold up just two fingers for me. Two fingers. It takes how many?
Two.
How many does it take?
Two.
All right. So it takes two. It's me regulating me. How many people say, well, you know, I'm going to really give myself a good talking to? I mean, so you know there's two of you in there. There's me talking to me. Now, my guess is some people have more than two, but they're probably on medication. So we'll wish them well. All right, but it takes two. Now, here's the thing you got to know. It's me and me, all right? It's me and me. Okay, so it does take two. See, that one's for the over 40. This is for the younger 40. See, you can tell who's young. They're like, oh, yeah. Okay. Young children do not develop mature inner speech until around the age of 6. Some girls can get it at 4. Some boys can wait till 9. So, but that's an average. Now, everyone in this room knows this. Everybody knows this. If you've ever ridden in a car with 4-year-olds in the back seat, okay, they don't have they're not talking to themselves in their head. You sit in that car and they're like, and if it's a boy, it's like, and everybody goes, I'm going to take him over here. If it's a girl, well, we're going to have a flow, and then I was going over there, and then the little princess. But then we're going to do this, and we're over there, and I picked up my dolly. My dolly said this. You know, they're just, you know, like, oh, my gosh, shut up. It's amazing when all their inner speech comes out loud. I mean, it's just like they just go on incessantly. And we know this, and it's interesting. You know what I love about this, too, is the moms have that off switch. You know, a mom has to turn that off switch on, because if they listen to that incessant chatter all day long, they'd have to shoot themselves. So they have an off switch. So if you ride with a mother in the car, you're hearing every word in the back seat, and mom's over there trying to talk to you too. Where would you like to eat? And I'm like, oh God. How can anybody think? But that's why when they come up, you can hear this too. This is the opposite side of that. They go, Mom, 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 Mom! You know, and finally you go, could you just talk to this one? Oh, I didn't hear her. And I'm like, well, that's a blessing and a curse, let me tell you right there. So imagine with the young children, all their inner speech comes out loud. And that's why if you work with preschoolers, you know way too much than you need to know. You'll be sitting there in a circle reading brown bear, a little book, and they'll go, Daddy took out the trash in his underwear. And you're like, well, there you go. Thank you for sharing. So, but if you can imagine that everybody in here had electrodes on their head, And since we've just been together and our moments together, and all your inner speech was broadcasted out loud. I know, it's like, whoa. I'd be sitting here talking about, oh, well, let's talk about the brain states, and someone in the back would go, did I take the chicken out? You know, so you can see where that bizarre stuff pops out. So what happens then? What happens if it takes two? Me regulating me, using my mature inner speech to regulate myself. Young children don't have inner speech. How do they self-regulate? How do they calm themselves down? How do they manage their emotions? How do they do all this? The answer is quite simply, they don't. And most of you know that too. So we have to be the co-regulators. We have to be the ones. We are the other one. They are one with us, makes two. So that's our job. And we're going to learn how to do our job. And that's what conscious discipline is about. So how we actually will relate to children at certain times when they're upset, we're going to make their self-regulation skills stronger, or we're going to make them weaker. And we're going to show you all that with a brain model. Now, how many of you growing up said, when I grow up, I will never fill in the blank. I will never blank my own child. I will never do that. How many said that growing up? How many blanked them pretty quickly? Yes. So, and then there's times where we don't. Again, it's that two system we talked about in the last one. There's times when you're your best you, and there's times when you're not. So there's times when you have a brilliant moment. You're in a relaxed, alert state. You're very present. You have a challenging moment, but you have low stress within yourself, and you open your mouth, and you're brilliant. How many have had those moments? You know it, you're brilliant. You're like, wow, this thing that looked like a disaster, the right words come out and it falls away like a cloud. Then you have those times where it's not exactly go that way, that you're actually in the lower centers of your brain. You're not facing a high challenge situation with a low stress interstate. You got high stress here and high stress there. Bam, those collide, you open your mouth, out comes your mother, and you don't even have to move your lips. Or your aunt, or your uncle, or your grandma, or a teacher. Out comes somebody. It's almost like you got a CD-ROM that just gets pumped in your head, and you go, and then you go, oh, Lordy, what have I done? And again, that can produce some guilt later, which impacts us also. So let's look at a brain model. So the goal is to create safe environments, right? We want safe, we want connected. So let's bring up our brain, our three-person brain, and I'm gonna show you what's under the hood, so to speak. So we're gonna learn about what's going on in a brain model. We can see how our behaviors are very similar. If we were in India and Korea, I mean, conscious discipline is all over the world, and it's amazing when you go from country to country with such cultural differences, we find such similarities because it's all about knowing what's under the hood, so to speak. And this is what we'll do. So my mom used to say to me, boy, Becky, you have worked yourself up into a state. And I never got what she meant. I mean, I'm like, what do you mean I worked myself into a state? I wanted to go spend a night over here. You said no. You worked me into a state. You know, I didn't work myself into a state, but now I get it. I did work myself into a state. So we use three general states in conscious discipline, and these are mind, body, brain states. However, I'm just going to call them brain states, all right? First, you need to understand that the brain is an interconnected whole. Big interconnected web, a whole of differentiated systems that have certain jobs to do. And it's important that these jobs or these differentiated systems communicate with all the other systems. So this is more of a metaphor to use to apply skills from than it is a neuroscience lesson. But it's accurate enough. Okay, so we have a survival state. So here's Jenny representing the survival state. And the survival state is triggered. And so Jenny, pull that first one out. And it's triggered by threat, okay? So here I can come over and it's like, holy cow. You know, if a wolf was actually coming in here, everybody'd go, oh my gosh. And it would throw you into a survival state. This survival state is triggered by threat. Now, what you need to know is sometimes we can make everything seem like a threat. We can make children so disrespectful that it feels like a threat to our authority. We can make those clothes on the floor that didn't get into the hamper look like a threat to my entire life. And I will kill you unless you pick them up. So what skills do we have when we get into a survival state? So the survival state is triggered when we perceive threat. Now, what are the skills we have when we perceive threat? So the first skill is attack. So we can attack. We can also defend. And the last one is surrender. So we can surrender. Now think of a dog. Think of a dog. Two dogs. One dog comes up and kind of rah, rah, rah. The other dog will fight back, right? Rah, 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 rah. The other dog will run. The other dog will lay on its belly and do this thing, right? Surrender. Now, historically, we have thought, oh, if I could just scare the child enough. See, this is the intent to punish. If I could punish them enough and scare them enough and put the fear of God in them, so to speak, I would shove them down into the brainstem and they would raise this beautiful flag and go, oh, yes, I will love to clean my room and do my homework. Thank you for throwing me down here. But that's not the case exactly. Now, girls surrender more than boys. Young children surrender more than older. And firstborn surrender more than the next. So those of you who had more than two, more than one, I'm sorry. Because, well, actually, you're blessed because they taught you another lesson. That which you were doing with that first one isn't going to work with that second one. So what happens when we surrender, though? I want you to understand this. We're not surrendering in a sense of a very peaceful surrender. What's happening is our body is actually shutting down. We shut down our body into and start dissociating from our own selves. And what it actually does is kind of cut a cable between here and the higher centers of our brain, which affect our attention, our anxiety, depression, most of the mental illnesses that we have, learned helplessness, comes from having our cable cut. It makes us more likely to be addictive because we can't manage our own inner state. So having them surrender is not the best thing, but it is tricky because sometimes they'll come down there and surrender. The next moment they won't. It's like, oh man, I still think it would work if I just scare them a little more. Get a bigger spider. Okay, now what happens down here, if you'll get the clacker out, what happens is this survival state regulates our autonomic nervous system. Now that's kind of a big word, but we have two systems. One is like the gas pedal in a car. You know, you hit the gas and so we have a gas pedal, and it's called the sympathetic. So it's like sympathetic nervous system says fight or flight, go, 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 live on adrenaline, go, go, go. And then we have a parasympathetic, it's like the brake in the car, and it stops the car and goes, pause, pause, relax, breathe, shut down. And so if we're gonna make it through town, we need to be able to hit the brake and the gas at the right time, right? Now, I don't know about you, but for the last 20 years, I kept my gas pedal, keep the pedal to the metal and go. And I actually made myself sick because you keep that out of balance and you're going to get immune disorders. Because the more you ride in that car too hard, your immune system listens and goes, oh, more stress, more stress, more stress, more stress. Ah, collapse. So what we want, I'm going to use this first, what we want is to have a balance. We need a steady beat, like this. We want that beat of the clacker. So this clacker is representing our autonomic nervous system. We want a steady little balance. Here we go, driving through town, got the gas, got the brake. Now, this is set in utero. So if a mother is anxious during pregnancy, her heartbeat is higher. So the child might be born like this. That's called a difficult temperament, hard to eat, hard to sleep. Okay? And if a child, a mother is depressed in utero, which slows your heart rate, a child might be born like this. In extreme cases, we call that failure to thrive. So we want to have that steady beat. And this steady beat, interesting, starts with the heart rate of the mom, but also, listen to this, hum, dee, dum, dee. So that's why all those beautiful nursery rhymes, Peter, Peter, pumpkin eater. That's why they're so universal. What happens when you have a child? Now, well, let me just use it a minute for a second. Okay, see right now, of all the children you've known, see if you can, if a name comes. Imagine the children. See if this brings a name to you. Someone in your home or in your classroom if you're a teacher. How many got two or three names? You know that child, right? Yeah, no. Okay, now, how many know this child? You know that when you got a name? And you're constantly going, and let's say it's me, Becky, Becky. Becky, look at me. Becky, look, Becky, hey, look at me. You know, they're like, okay. All right. So what would happen if a child is getting upset? When they get upset, their clacker speeds up. Would you agree? I hate you. I don't, and here's how we approach. Well, I told you. How is it when we get upset, when they get upset, what do we do to the clacker? We raise it. Okay? And this is what we try to do. They get upset and we're going to, all right, I'll show you. All right? And so the same thing with the slow one. Now, first of all, we kind of go, here we go up to them. Because we kind of sync up with them. But also then we try this. Look at me when I'm talking to you. You know, so you can see our response to this state or to this child is critical. We're going to make it better or worse. And we tend to think if we could over-anger them, if we could over-scream them, if we could overdo them, that'll calm them or they will shut them up. It won't shut them up. It shuts them down for a lifelong history of troubles, including physical health and mental health issues, such as depression, anxiety, learned helplessness. Now, so what can we do? This state is asking a question. It's saying, am I safe? Am I safe? So most of us don't think that a child who comes in all armored up, ready to attack everybody, they walk in like this, you know, and they push a chair down and get in this stance like this. We don't go, oh, looky, here's a child coming in saying, am I safe? No, we go, oh, my gosh, I thought you were absent. But they're asking, am I safe? Am I safe? And everyone in this room, everyone listening, the first question you ask when you move into a novel situation is, am I safe? Am I safe? So this is the first building block of conscious discipline classrooms, conscious discipline homes, safety. And we already changed our job description. My job is to keep it safe. Your job is to help keep it safe. What we're going to learn is some combined skills. As we go through our sessions, we're going to go through some skills, but we're going to learn some combined skills too. And I use NARCs because, in essence, if you can't stay regulated from within, doesn't it make sense you're going to find something out there that's going to help you regulate? And so I thought NARCs works, you know, like narcotics. Okay. Anyway, it's the best I could come up with. But you see, it could work. And we're going to go through. Now, you don't need to know what this means right now. But you're just going to be familiar with it because I'm going to build a skill set so that when you run into a child who spends a lot of time in their survival state, you'll know exactly how to help them. Also, this is developed when you're born. So the first 15 months of life is pretty much this system online. So you need to be using this as you start life off in a strong way. All right. Now, the next state is the emotional state. Okay, so the emotional state is the state when I told you, you know, you open your mouth and out comes your mother kind of thing. And what that is, if you pull out the next one, Prince, it's really what it is. It's a CD-ROM. So what happened when you were growing up, when your parents got, or your teacher or other adults that were significant in your life, got angry, it gets recorded in your unconscious part of your brain. And it gets recorded kind of like on a CD-ROM. So when you get triggered into that same state, the CD-ROM gets played, and then out comes those same beliefs and behaviors. So when our buttons get pushed, so to speak, and this is a button pushing one, when our buttons get pushed, that's when it happens. Okay, so what happens then is, if you put those in the pocket and put these on. So what happens when our buttons are pushed? Now, this is triggered when the world is not going our way. So the world's not going away. You know, I wanted not to drive over here and get stuck at the hospital. I wanted to come straight down the road and do in 3 minutes instead of 20. So that wasn't going my way. So what happens when the world doesn't go our way, it tends to push our buttons. We tend to get upset with some kind of emotions generated. And what happens is we start listening then to the internal speech in our head instead of being present with the situation. Because that CD-ROM goes in, and in here it goes, I can't believe people act like this. No one should act like this. Or why in the world would you do this? Or I can't believe I did that again. So this is that inner speech, and it can be very, very critical in certain states because it's recorded on your CD-ROM. And everybody in here has a different CD-ROM. Mine is a very, look what you've done, and look, mine's a very externalizing CD-ROM. You people are crazy, and what are you doing, these stupid people in the world, and look what you made me do, and blah, blah, blah. And some people have a very internalizing CD-ROM. Oh, I've messed it up again, and look what I've done. Now, I get there, but I start out and come in. Some people start in and stay in. Of course, that leads to depression. Outside hollering leads to aggression. So in general terms, I'm the exception certainly, but in general terms, women go to therapy and men go to jail. So it's asking the question, am I loved? Do you love me? And if you loved me, you would do these things. If you loved me, you wouldn't aggravate me to death. If you loved me, you could read my mind and figure it out. If you loved me, you'd listen when I talk to you. If you loved me, you'd do what I say. And when you don't do what I say, you don't love me. I feel rejected. So in this state, you're always going to make it about someone else. Someone else is making you happy. Someone else is making you angry. It's all about how they need to do better to make you feel better so that you feel adored and loved and beloved. And if they don't, you're going to berate somebody, yourself or others, for being too unworthy to love. All right. So what skills do you have in here? Blame. Make everybody else responsible. Try to make them feel guilty. Any skill you can to make them feel bad so they'll make you feel better. What skills do you have here? Attack. Slam the door. Run out the room. Hide under the sink. So if a child's in a survival state and you try to touch them, they'll pull away or they'll try to hit you. If a child is in the emotional state and you try to touch them, they'll go, stop it, stupid. So this is verbal aggression, name calling, exclusion. We don't like her. We're not going to play with her. This is physical aggression. How do you know the difference? The body's involved. Hitting, pushing, kicking, hiding, running. This is name calling, stupid, idiot. Us and theming. Then the next state we have is the executive state. Now, in this state, let's put this on first, Blanche. On this state, this is the higher centers of the brain. Now, remember, this is conscious. This stuff is unconscious. Okay? This is conscious. So up here, we're looking. Oh, I wonder what that behavior is about. Oh, it's a call for help. What are they trying to tell me? What skill are they missing? What do I need to teach? Let me investigate this. Let me find some clues and watch that child and notice them carefully and find out what's going on. So this skill is asking, what can I learn? Oh man, I got to really investigate it. And when we get into this state, this is that brilliant moment that you've had. Oh man, because this state is the optimal state and it's called relaxed alertness. This is where you have high challenge and low stress. Because if you have high challenge and high stress, you're way down here wallowing in the weeds. So let's see. In here we have what's called the executive skills. And these are the skills. This is the CEO. So in this state, it's the CEO of the brain. The boss gets to override impulses and insecurities from this section. Oh, I can override all that. Oh, you're stupid. Well, maybe not today. You know, I can override that. So in the executive skills, it allows you to set and achieve goals, get along with others, see from someone else's point of view, because in here, this is the beauty of this state. If you put these on, you get to literally, in the executive skill, you get to choose how you see a situation. In this state, you are told from your pre-programmed, conditioned child rearing, people who live upstairs and make noise are called idiots. That's what I went to see my grandbaby, and she was in Williamsburg, and we're staying in the same room, and she's four, and we had a condo to go play from, you know, to stay, have fun on a vacation. As soon as I walk in, we lay in there, and we hear these people walk, and she says, oh, those are people upstairs, they're idiots. And I'm like, do all people that make noise, are they idiots? She goes, no, but they also drive red cars. So you can see she's putting it all together. Where are the idiots in the world, you know? But here, and that'll stick with her. You know, that's kind of put in that unconscious part. So in this state, you're told, oh, people who make noise are idiots. It comes from early, early pre-programmed unconscious conditioning. When you get here, the beauty is, no, I don't have to go with that. Let me look at it again. Let me see the difference between traditional and conscious. Let me reflect. Let me be conscious of some of this stuff and go, whoa, you know, I can see that different. That could be a call for help. That could be communication. So that's the beauty of this. And these executive skills allow us to manage ourselves. It allows us to give emotional regulation, manage our emotions. Now, how many in here and how many listening have had a very critical boss in your life? Micromanaging critical boss. Okay, how many have had a boss that was supportive and encouraging? How many have had a boss that was just a boss in name and never did anything? All right. Now, here's the question. What type of boss do you have in your head? And what type of boss do you want to keep in your head? And what kind of boss do you want to instill in the heads of the next generation? One that encourages you to set your goals. When you're off track, goes whoop, 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 come on, come on, come on, come on, you can do it. Pull it back on track, keep going, you can do it. You want that boss, or do you want one that's when you're in the weeds goes, well, you know, you've done it again. You know, it's not like this is new, you should know this. You're just inadequate, this is what it boils down to. And so then the last thing, and we didn't do this for the emotional state, so if you'll pull yours out. So you can imagine, these are going to be a set of skills, and I'm going to teach you in this series. I'm going to teach you all these. So when a child spends a lot of time in the emotional state, and this kicks in a lot around 3 to 7, here's the skills for the emotional state. I use the word reject because it's asking for love. So these are going to represent a set of skills we're going to learn in this series. And for the executive state, it's space, all space to be brilliant. These are going to represent skills. This is what we're going to learn. I just want you to start being familiar with the terms. Okay, if you put those back. All right, now watch this. I'm going to act out something. You're just going to call guess the state. Okay? So, 5-0, yes. All right. And here.
Survival.
No, now that's survival. Remember, survival is also hiding. So withdrawn. What's this?
Survival.
All right. Now, this one. Stupid.
Emotional.
I hate you.
Emotional.
I'm not even going to be with people like you.
Emotional.
You made me so angry. It's all your fault. I would be fine if you weren't born. And this one. I don't like it when you touch me. Walk around me. So again, it would be this journey of actually using socially acceptable words. Touch me, Jenny. And it would be bam. Touch me. Don't touch me, stupid. And touch me. I don't like it when you touch me. Keep your hands to yourself. It's the journey of using our socially acceptable words. But unless we teach children socially acceptable words, the journey stops and we end up stuck in pre-programmed, conditioned responses that in an unconscious state we have no control of. Let's give our brain a hand. Once we learn about the brain states, we figure out ways and simple ways, because this is a simple way, and also they're color-coded. So forget, you don't remember emotional state, forget all that, but you can remember red, green, and blue. So watch how we can teach this to kids. Watch this next video and see how we can teach this to children so they can use this information to guide their life.
Wait, okay, so she taught you about the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell us what you got.
The best state for taking tests is executive state, and that's when you're feeling calm and you're not anxious about anything or scared. And then there's survival state is when you get very scared and you just want to run or do something with your body. And then emotional state is when you say bad things and you just don't feel good and you want to hurt other people's feelings.
Yeah. And I saw you looking over here, so you had a little, this is kind of what you were referring to right there. Yeah. Okay. And does that make sense to you, Will?
Yes, because I really like when Ms. Abel says the best place in your brain is the executive state, and that's the top of your brain, because that's how you can solve problems and do work. But when you're in emotional and survival state, you can't. It's hard to work like that.
And does that seem true to you?
Yes.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
It really, yeah, it does.
So, have you got all angry and frustrated and have found it hard to think?
I have, and that's when I use the I feel, I choose, and it made me get back to the executive state.
Let me ask you kind of, just think about it for a minute, because I know this is a new question. Understanding your own brain, knowing that it works best when you're in your executive state and when you get all emotional or when you get scared, you don't think as well or you might be hurtful. Has that personally helped you understanding that?
Yes.
Okay, and so how does that help you by understanding that?
It helps me because I know, like, when I start to show signs of saying mean things, I can take a deep breath and go back to the executive state.
And then you feel better because you're not acting like a meanie.
One of the things I love what she says is when I start seeing the signs, can y'all see that going back from what we said? She caught herself. She became conscious of the signs. She was in the weeds. And she brought herself back to a path. And she's 10. You know, that's quite phenomenal. And I've seen it with 3-year-olds, I've seen it with 4-year-olds, I've seen it. Oh, it's amazing when we change our mind and change our skills. So often we say, well, what does this got to do with relationships? How does relationships govern things then? When you said the executive center was the CEO of the brain, it's like, let's figure that out. So let me show you one more thing. So if you, my brain would come back. And what we're going to do is demonstrate it in a different way. So if we've lined them up so you can see, but in essence, this is kind of the portal. The emotional state is the portal from which sensory information and information comes into the brain. And it comes through our relationships also. So Prince here in the emotional state is like a traffic cop, gets to direct the flow of information, whether it's going to go down to the survival state, or whether that information is going to go up to the executive state. So Prince, you have the choice. I'm going to speak to you, and it's going to be up to Prince, and you're going to point your wand, yes you are, of which way you think the information would go. Prince, I said sit down, stop messing around. He would send the information down. Now, there's a good chance when he sends that information down, we get into the survival state, she could throw her chair. She could knock nail papers off the floor. And now we're calling the principal because they are being disrespectful. Okay? Now, I'm going to give you another one. Prince, it's time for lunch. Line up and walk safely to the door. So the information goes up here. So if he's walking to the door and he sees something that would distract him over there because this manages distractions, you know that CEO could say, no, stick to the goal. Let's line up like this. Do you see how this works? And what governs the willingness of him to give us a little bit of leeway to make an oops? So I might say, it's time to line up, do it at the door. And he still may give me the benefit of the doubt, just a teeny bit, because the quality of our relationship is strong enough to use conflicts as a learning tool as opposed to so weak that every little oops I do, it goes that way. So this is important to understand that it has to go through this, and this goes through your filters. Every CD-ROM is different, so we must get to know children individually. I had a child once in I brought in a violin player, a whole classroom of kids, but I brought in a violin player, a beautiful violinist, to come in and just show the kids. Well, the violinist got up there and got the thing under her chin, and she went like this with her, what's that thing called, a wand? The bow. Okay, so she goes like this to get ready to play. When she went like this, at a child out here went berserk, leaned over, flew back, reached over to the child next to him, grabbed their face, and just actually ripped it so that it was blood coming down. Now, what happened was the child had had trauma with being hit with a stick. But I didn't know that. So this, when this happened like that, bing, went off the deep end. Now, I could have said, oh, that's disrespect, and what are you doing, and that child's just hurting for no reason. Or I could say, wow, that is a big, big, big call for help. And it was a big call for help. I saw it that way, and we got the child some help. But it could have gone way different in just being punished for upsetting the violin day. But these filters are important. So if you'll step back and take off your hat, I'll take your hat with me. And I'm going to come over with the filters. So I said at the very beginning of this session, state dictates behavior. Say that with me.
State dictates behavior.
And it dictates behavior because, let's do it this way. It dictates behavior because it dictates how we see. It dictates our perception. So when you're looking at conflict through a survival state, you see it as a threat to life. And so your intent from this state is going to be to punish them. When you see it through an emotional state, it's going to be an irritation, getting in the way of the world going smoothly for you and implying that you aren't adequate or lovable. So you're going to try to stop it. when you can see through this state, you look out and go, oh, it's a call for help. I can change how I see it. I can override my pre-programmed responses, and I can go, ah, I can brainstorm. I can help this child. Does everybody see this? This is important to understand. So if y'all just lower these down so you don't feel so tired, let me show you how this works. If you're in a school and you're working, you go, oh, we're all going to do conscious discipline. Okay? But there's some teachers who've lived in their survival state for like years, you know, and it's just been so stressful. And, you know, a lot of us think, well, it would maybe retirement, but no. Okay. And there's people who have are more aware and more conscious, and they know about the executive state. So what happens in a school, some are viewing the conflict from this state, and so when they view it here, they want that child sent to the principal, and until the principal has made that child do the time for the crime and pay for what they've done. And if the principal doesn't have them pay for it and punish them, then we go, ah, I'm going to the school board because this principal doesn't care. And of course, this person sees it as a need to punish. This one says, I've got strategies to stop it. And this one says, well, here's some interventions we could teach. And they all going to argue amongst themselves about which is the correct one. But what I want you to understand is you yourself will fly up and down this all day long. You know, so here comes a child, pushes your buttons. You're going, oh my gosh, I don't get paid enough to deal with this. And then they push it again. You're like, okay, I'm going to kill them, but I can't. I'm a professional. All right, pull it together. Well, I'm going to give you a lecture because you should know how bad you've made me feel. And then at some point after lunch, you've taken, you know, you go, okay, nah, you know. So thank you guys. Give them a hand. I'll just take them back with you. Okay. One of the reasons it's important to learn these states is because some skills work better in each state. Everybody in here has been overwhelmed in a survival state. Have you not been so overwhelmed? You can't think. You're just over the edge, and someone comes up to you and gives you a choice. Oh, would you like some coffee or tea? What do you say? I don't care, just give me something. I don't. You know, so giving a child a choice in the survival state is going to make it worse. But giving them a child a choice in an emotional state when they're feeling just a teensy bit powerless, they go, oh. So we're going to learn what skill, what works best in what state. So let's bring that imaginary animal into your mind. Hold it in your hand. If you are willing to spend time becoming conscious of what state you are in and noticing the states of others, especially children, if you're willing to spend one day noticing states and identifying them, if you're willing to do that, toss your commitment into the box. And I will hold it in my heart and do the same as we walk this journey together. Until next time, I wish you well.